And we are back with Ellen Moyer on the HealthyLife.net News at 7. She's back with us. Tips for sustainable living. You can always find out more about Ellen and these tips on her website, ellenmoyerphd.com. Ellen, what have you got for us today?
Okay, I thought today would be good to talk about what we can learn from indigenous societies. And it's hard to find a good word for this. By indigenous, I really mean traditional societies, tribal societies, people who live in tribes rather than states like we do. Homo sapiens arose 200,000 years ago, and since that time, people have lived in bands and tribes. And our way of doing things, states, they arose only 5,400 years ago. So our type of society in states represents just a tiny and narrow slice of humanity. Indigenous societies show generally how all our ancestors lived for tens of thousands of years, and they encompass a huge variety of solutions devised to solve human problems. Many developed sustainable ways of life that persisted for thousands of years. So we can learn a lot from them as we navigate our way to a sustainable way of life once again. The first lesson is a strong feeling of connection with nature. Typically, indigenous peoples feel deeply and spiritually rooted to the land, believing that, quote, when you destroy the earth, you destroy yourself. Unlike most Westerners today, they spend a lot of time outdoors. Many indigenous communities today are fighting a hard battle against resource extraction and poverty. Nevertheless, protecting the earth is a high priority, if not the highest. For example, Native Americans refuse to move their camp that is directly in the path of the proposed Alberta tar sands pipeline. Despite desperate poverty, horrific living conditions, and 90% unemployment, these Native Americans refused a $1 billion offer in exchange for allowing pipelines to go through their territories. They say they will not lose their beloved Mother Earth. They insist that Mother Earth must not only be protected but restored. It's really amazing. Another lesson is in strong social bonds. People in tribal societies often don't travel far, and the same groups of people end up living together their entire lives. Loneliness is uncommon, and this is how we lived for most of our long history. The way many of us live today, isolated in our boxes and families split apart geographically and emotionally, is not what we were designed for by our long evolutionary past. People who have lived in both indigenous and state societies miss those lifelong social bonds. So traditional societies teach us that we need stronger social bonds than many of us have now. Not really sure how to do that since we move around so much geographically. Another lesson is that the standard American diet kills. People in indigenous societies typically don't suffer from chronic diseases that are epidemic in Western societies and that are bankrupting our healthcare systems. For example, virtually no traditional New Guineans die of stroke, diabetes, or heart attacks. But if they adopt our trashy diet, they start to have these problems. So the lesson is to eat organic, whole, real foods, not junk. Another lesson concerns stress. Many people in Western societies have more time and scheduling pressures, pressures to work long hours, competitiveness, and just general stress. We were not built to have this much stress, and we need to find solutions, including finding balance between work and play. Many Westerners just don't seem very happy. You know, walk around in a crowd and you don't see a lot of laughs and smiles. It's a sad way to live. Another lesson concerns sharing. People in indigenous societies are often interested in learning about other societies, whereas Americans think they know it all and they're just not very interested in learning about other people in the world. we should start learning from other societies because they know how to live sustainably, among other things. People in indigenous societies share things with others, even when they have hardly anything at all, whereas Americans tend to keep things to themselves. Often, indigenous societies care about future generations, not just people today. For example, many Native American cultures think in terms of seven generations, and they require that decisions they make today must also work for seven generations down the road. So they have a planning horizon of about 100 years. Another lesson is just the incredible human flexibility, adaptability, and resilience. Humans can live almost anywhere, from equatorial desert areas to polar ice caps. It turns out that war is optional and preventable, not inevitable. So there are some rare societies that live peacefully. These are generally in remote areas with low population densities. Trashing the environment, likewise, is optional, not inevitable. There are many societies that have lived sustainably for thousands of years. If they can, maybe we can if we try, which we haven't tried. Similarly, domination of women by men is also optional and not inevitable. In some rare societies, women enjoy equal or superior status. So gender equality is achievable. Now, in my commentary so far, Westerners have not come out smelling like a rose. But it's important not to romanticize indigenous societies, and it's important to not knock Western societies. There's some really rough stuff in indigenous societies, including sometimes killing of infants and elders and even cannibalism. And Western achievements and amenities such as running water, electricity, appliances, cars, etc. are wonderful. I wouldn't want to give them up. We have many reasons to be grateful for all that we have. So what is the future? Well, we can help indigenous societies. They want the cool things we have, and who wouldn't? But we must respect their rights to exist and stop grabbing their land and their resources. We also need to respect their equality with us and lose our pompous-ass attitude toward them. Perhaps undeveloped countries and indigenous peoples today can bypass the destructive, dirty industry phase and go right from undeveloped to high-tech, high-nature. For example, they could bypass combustion-based energy and go directly to solar, as in Bhutan that I talked about recently. Thanks to the internet and social media, a network of indigenous movements that is increasingly global, relevant, and powerful now exists. Indigenous movements usually use nonviolent tactics such as blockades, occupation of public spaces, mass marches, and traditional political work. An example is in 2005, Evo Morales was elected as Bolivia's first indigenous head of state. In 2010, he convened 30,000 international delegates for the World People's Conference on Climate Change and the Rights of Mother Earth. They decried colonialism, unrestrained growth of capitalism, domination of nature, and climate change. Dr. Maria Elena Garcia, who studies indigenous movements at the University of Washington, believes the indigenous movements offer hope and, quote, the importance of the imaginary, of imagining a different world, imagining a different way of being in the world. So in closing, what we need to do is combine sustainability, which we can learn about from indigenous societies, with technology to create a high-tech, high-nature way of life. We can have it all. And the key lessons in sustainability that we can learn from indigenous societies are that humans are amazingly adaptable and can create the world we want, and that we need to feel more connected to the earth and to each other, eat real food, stress less, enjoy life more, and share more, including with future generations.
All right, and listeners can always find out more tips about living sustainably from Ellen on her website. Why don't you share that with our listeners now, Ellen?
Oh, thanks, Jay. Yeah, my website is ellenmoyerphd.com, and that's spelled ellenmoyerphd.com.
Thanks again, and of course, listeners can hear Ellen next time on the HealthyLife.net News at 7.
Thanks so much, Jay.
All right, one moment.